Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Before we get into Rex's early impressions of Le Golf National, the Olympic men's competition that gets started on Thursday in Paris. Rex, I first wanted to start not with Jonathan Vegas, who won for the fourth time on the PGA Tour at the 3M Open, but instead John Rahm, who, yes, is an Olympian, be playing for Team Spain, but he is a winner for the first time on LIV. Who do you think it was more important for, John Rahm himself or LIV Golf, to have its biggest signee nab his first victory?
Oh, probably John Rahm, simply because we had talked about this sort of ad nauseum until we got to the Open Championship about when we were going to pass judgment on whether joining LIV Golf was a good idea and a bad idea. And I always want to footnote this and say that for some players, joining LIV Golf clearly did not impact them from a competitive standpoint. You look at Brooks Koepka, he's won a major since he joined. Certainly not Bryson DeChambeau, who's also won a major since he joined. He is still very competitive, and it hasn't impacted him at all. I think the thought with John Rahm was, if he got to LIV Golf in 54 holes and shorts and loud music and a relaxed atmosphere, maybe that wasn't the best recipe for him. Maybe that's not what he needed to get ready for major championships. And through three of the major championships, that was pretty much the case. He didn't play in one because of an injury, but the other two, he never even really factored in, didn't play well in those two. So I think the narrative going into the Open was, can he finally find a way to turn it around? Can he finally find a way to be the John Rahm that we all know he can be? And he was, to a certain degree, at Royal Troon. I believe he finished tied for eighth. It was his only top 10 in the majors all season long. And then certainly to turn it around the very next week, and not just to win the individual title, but his team also won the team title. I think that's huge momentum for him coming into the Olympics and the rest of the season, more so than whatever this does, a bump, let's say, for LIV Golf.
It does feel like a little bit of a turning point in John Rahm's year. Had a chance to win at Valderrama, just as he's had a chance to win a couple of other times on the LIV circuit this year and was unable to get it done. The top 10, as you mentioned, at the Open Championship. I think the only surprise, Rex, is that it took 11 events for John Rahm to get a win on LIV. When you thought when he announced the signing in December, like, I think the realistic expectation was John Rahm's going to win three or four times. All of a sudden, the fields are more condensed. They're certainly top-heavy. At times, he was just coming off a four-win season on the PGA Tour against better competition, including a major championship, and it has not come to fruition, at least to this point. There's still a couple events remaining on the LIV schedule. I think it's certainly been an adjustment for John Rahm, has it not? I mean, this was the first time in his career that he's really endured media criticism, some of which was warranted. It was clear, despite his protesting in some press conferences, that he was clearly not playing his best. He'd struggled with his driver. He made a driver shaft switch after the PGA Championship. I also think that the switch to 54 holes was a transition and an adjustment for him, perhaps more than it was for other players. You know, there's just such a different cadence and a flow to the competition when you can't really afford a quote-unquote off day or a bad day. It's just such a sprint, and for a player who is in his late 20s and is conditioned to strictly playing 72-hole stroke play events, I do think that that was a transition for him as well. He's been telling us, Rex, that he's playing a lot better than perhaps his results indicated. We hear that from players all the time. Doesn't matter which tour that you're playing on, but he's top 10 in every LIV event. He was number one in the tour strokes gain metrics. Do you think this validates what John Rahm was saying, and can he still salvage what to this point has kind of been a lost year?
Well, yeah, I think you are what your record says you are in this particular case. And he said he was playing better. You're right. That's sort of the same old tune that every player's going to sing whenever they start at least trending towards a slump. But if you win, then you have to believe him on some level. He clearly wasn't getting the scores out of his swing that he wanted to. And that, you look at what he did last week in England. It was a very, really good first step. Going back to your original question, I can't wait for whenever this chapter is written in John Rahm's life, and go back to essentially last fall when he was wrestling with this decision about joining LIV Golf. I truly believe, and again, we're going to have to wait to see if this is the case, that he felt like he was going to be the catalyst for change, that his signing with LIV Golf at that moment in time with the PGA Tour and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia locked in these negotiations, that him leaving was going to be such a shock to the system for the PGA Tour that it was going to force them to make some sort of deal with the PIF and bring the game back together. I truly believe that was his motivation there. That clearly has not happened. And now we're essentially a year down the road, and we're still waiting for some sort of movement on that front that doesn't seem to be coming anytime soon. And so from that came the ashes of the struggles on the golf course. And you're right. Every time he spoke with the media the last few months, he seemed to be more defensive than maybe normal. And he has a tendency to get really defensive in those interviews anyway. And I think everything that has a lot to do with the idea that there was backlash that he didn't anticipate. There were unintended consequences with him leaving, thinking that he was going to be the one that caused the change. That was the seminal moment when everything came together. I think all of those things kind of coalesced into the idea that maybe he made a mistake. And again, we won't know this until this chapter is written, but I think it's fair to at least speculate that maybe he had put himself into a corner and didn't like where he ended up.
Yeah, clearly 9 months on, he overstated his leverage. Again, he thought that he could be the impetus for immediate change. And the fact that we're now barreling towards the end of 2024, we do not yet have a deal, and any sort of reintegration, again, would take years on from that. It's clear that John Rahm is going to be a live player for the foreseeable future, and he's sort of coming to grips with that. That's why I do think, Rex, that this was an important victory, not just for Rahm, but also for LIV Golf. He was their highly prized signee, depending on which report you believe. Like, we're talking $300+ million to get him on the LIV roster. He, at times this season, has signaled his unhappiness, whether it's chirping at fans, whether he's talking about sort of pushing LIV to get not from 54 holes, but again, to 72 holes. He's talked about now adding a Lynx golf course immediately preceding the Open Championship to get LIV players better acclimated to sort of LIV golf, to Lynx golf conditions as well. And the questions that he was now receiving ahead of every major championship, essentially insinuating or suggesting that he had lost a step with how he played in the major championships. That's, if you're running LIV Golf, that's exactly what you do not want to hear. That the perception in 2022 that these guys took the bag, they no longer care about it, and all of a sudden you have a generational talent like John Rahm, who suffers a decline in form, who is no longer as relevant. That's a worst case scenario for LIV. LIV needs John Rahm to be just as relevant as possible. It's very similar to Bryson DeChambeau. Be front and center, be factoring in each and every major championship, making sure that LIV Golf and every LIV Golf tournament becomes appointment viewing, because you can't wait to see how John Rahm or Bryson DeChambeau do. That's why I think, even if it's coming in the 11th event, sort of validation of the John Rahm belief, of the John Rahm model, of integrating him into that team model, I think was really important as well.
And I think this reinforces what we kind of already knew about LIV Golf, because it is an interesting narrative that you bring up, the idea that somehow your best player became soft while he was playing that tour. Not saying I agree with that, not even throwing it out there for a discussion, but I can see how on the internet and social media, the way things can run rampant, you're right. That was clearly not the narrative that LIV Golf wants out there. I would counter and say I'm pretty sure that narrative has gone away already in recent years with the performance of Brooks Koepka and the majors and Bryson DeChambeau and many, many other of the LIV players. I don't really think, at least people who watch the game and know the game very well, have bought much into it. But yeah, I can see how if you're Greg Norman sitting in an office, you are suddenly filled with hope, and not just because of what he did at Royal Troon, followed by what he did in England. But I was on Golf Central earlier today with Tom Abbott, and he was talking about, we were doing sort of handicapping the field for this week's Olympic event, and he immediately went to John Rahm and the idea that a medal, whether if it's gold or otherwise, it doesn't really matter what color, that's going to motivate him, because being from Spain, we all know there, it's a very Olympic type country, that these types of sports resonate there much more so than we've seen among golfers in the United States. The first two Olympics that golf returned started in 2016. So I think all of those things together is a step forward for LIV Golf, but we're still in the same position we were 3 weeks ago. As far as a game, we're still a fractured game with a lot of problems.
Yeah, and just to put a fine point on it, with the softest angle, like Tyrrell Hatton, so he missed the, what, 4 or 5 footer on the hole, on the final hole, that could have forced a playoff. He was asked afterward, you know, does the happiness and the boost of a team victory sort of take away some of the sting of what could have been an individual victory? He said, no, it hurts all the same, if not a little bit more. I don't buy that softness angle and the players turning soft once they turn to LIV Golf and the guaranteed money of that. I think you saw the emotion as well, Rex, from John Rahm afterward. It wasn't the fact that he'd nipped his teammate for the individual title. He called it, in his own words, a very difficult year, not just the media criticism, not just some of the questions that he has had to answer, but also the fact that his wife, Kelly, has been on bed rest now for a couple of months as they're awaiting the couple's third child, as well as some of these life changes and adjustments that Jon Rahm has had to make. So in any case, he is now a winner in 2024 and barreling a full steam ahead into the Olympics. Sausage Finger is up in your brand new crisp blue polo. What's on your mind?
I don't think they make this in a smaller size. It's a little snug, is it not?
Snug. Yeah, not really. I would love to see some of our Golf Channel counterparts in what is a more slim fitting polo look.
Yeah, I can think of maybe one I was even on TV with today. If I had to guess someone, just to go ahead and throw it out there. I wanted to circle back around real quick. I was not available for the pod last week. You had Todd Lewis sub in for me, and according to some of the comments, that Todd needs to take my place. Is that what I need to understand, that the audience is done with Rex and Todd needs to step in and do this?
I was described by an avid follower as thoughtful and as thoughtful and provocative as usual, and that Todd was at least a temporary upgrade. I don't know if T. Lou could bring that sort of energy, bring that sort of heat 104 times a year as you and I do with this twice a week podcast. But nonetheless, it was great to get T. Lou on the podcast. I believe that's his first appearance in 2024. We'll certainly bring him back during the holiday season as we recap the 2024 and look ahead to the new year.
Did you hit the button every time you did Todd Lewis TV voice? Was it a button? Was it a buzzer?
I had the air horn queued up. Thankfully, I did not have to use it. There was a moment late in the podcast. I forget what the actual topic was, but I was very tempted to use it. At that point, we'd already meandered 50 minutes. I'm sure his wife was screaming at him to get off his iPad and start helping around the house. And so I did not have to use it, but it was a great podcast nonetheless. Nonetheless, our eternal thanks to T. Lou. You appear to be, Rex, in some sort of production trailer, I believe, ahead of the men's Olympic competition. You got on the grounds on Sunday after a week-long vacation, not with bunkmate, but with your wife. What have your initial impressions been so far as we re-up yet another Olympics?
We got on the ground at Le Golf National on Sunday. And, well, a couple things. One, I want to talk about the golf course, because the golf course you and I remember is from the 2018 Ryder Cup, and that will not be the golf course that they face this week. That's a longer conversation. But the one thing I was thrown about is getting here on Sunday, and this event has been transformed, at least in the players of the elite male golfer's mind, from something that, let's call it curiosity when it started in 2016 in Rio, to what we saw on Sunday, which was world number one Scottie Scheffler off what was probably another heartbreaking loss at Royal Troon, where he had a chance on Sunday and didn't get it done on the back nine. We played an 18-hole practice round on Sunday before this tournament. He played alongside Tom Kim. Just behind him was Xander Schauffele, the world number two, who's fresh off his victory at Royal Troon. They were getting in practice. I think that speaks volumes to what this means to the top players in the game now. We're not having the conversation anymore about top players skipping the Olympics because it doesn't fit into their schedules, or because Zika, which was the case back in 2016, or certainly COVID, when it was played 3 years ago in Tokyo. We're not having those conversations anymore. Instead, we're talking about the world's very best players are there this Sunday before. It's a conversation that we normally only have, almost exclusively only have, at major championships.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's exactly the approach that Scottie Scheffler just took at the Open Championship at Royal Troon, where he got into town early. He played Turnberry on Saturday, then he got to Royal Troon and played an entire 18-hole practice round ahead of the Open Championship, ahead of what he views as one of the most important tournaments in the world. I was just on Golf Central as well, obviously not in Paris. It's not like I had a credential.
That's a suit, yet. Right? That's why you're in the suit. That's the only, you're not, yeah, you don't think this is an occasion. You're doing it for Golf Central, right?
Yes, exactly. The Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lev is not an occasion. It's not like I had my credential revoked or rescinded, and I have to do this now from home. But Rex, I did find it very interesting that the player's attitude and the amount of buy-in is vastly different over these past 8 years. You think about Rio and the Zika virus that was circulating. There was certainly more of a focus on who was not there as opposed to who was. You were there for 2 weeks. In Tokyo, there was literally no atmosphere. You're one of, what, 500 people who are allowed on site. And you had, if you recall, Bryson DeChambeau and John Rahm, two of the biggest headliners in the game, who were ruled out of the Tokyo Olympics because of a positive test just a couple of weeks beforehand. This is like a full-throated, full-blooded Olympic experience. Officials estimating 30,000 fans are going to be on site each and every day at Le Golf National. No one's talking about who isn't there besides Bryson DeChambeau. That is long forgotten as well. He made sort of his own decision to join LIV Golf, which is not award official world golf ranking points. What do you sense from the players as well in terms of their attitudes? Because I sort of equate it as, if you won a major championship, if one of three players won a major in 2024, you sort of view this as a capstone to what has already been a great year. But if you're a Rory, if you're a Rahm, if you're a Ludvig Åberg, if you did not accomplish everything that you have wanted to so far in 2024, this is a great opportunity now to recalibrate your expectations and walk away with a title that I think in time will grow with even more meaning.
And it's not even a title. I'll go back 3 years to Tokyo when Rory McIlroy was in the playoff for the bronze medal. He ended up losing to CT Pan. And he talked about afterwards, it's as hard as he's ever played to finish third in his entire career. It's just not something you and I talk about. We didn't sit and interview the guy who finished third at Royal Troon 2 weeks ago and talked about how much this meant to him, because it really doesn't mean anything.
I take that back. I did. I wrote an entire story about Justin Rose. He was tied for second.
That's a silver medal. That's an entirely different conversation. I'm talking about the bronze medal, whoever finished third. Okay, it's not on top of my mind right now. But you get an idea of how much this means to them. And sort of the conversation that Tom Abbott and I had today was, you saw the earliest vestiges of this in Rio among the other nations, certainly Sweden with Henrik Stenson taking silver that year. It meant something different. It hit differently. They understood, in your nation, if you come home with a silver medal, you don't have to explain why that's special. Maybe in your nation, if you come home with the Claret Jug, which is what Henrik Stenson did, you probably did need to explain that to a couple people and tell them exactly what it meant and why it was important. Because medals in countries, almost every country that's not the United States, mean a little bit more if you're not a professional golfer. Whereas that has resonated over to the U.S. players. We've started to see clearly it means more and more to them. I had an opportunity to speak with Wyndham Clark and Colin Morikawa this afternoon about it. They'll be on tomorrow's Golf Central. But even among the players you just pointed out, you're right. If Rory's looking back at his season and saying, I need to find a way to put some sort of exclamation point on this, there's no more majors, this is a perfect opportunity for him to do that. There is no Ryder Cup. He talked about, all right, he still has to play the FedEx Cup playoffs, and clearly that's important. He still talked about maybe winning the season-long race on this side, on the European Tour. But I guarantee what he's really thinking about is trying to get it done here, because that's going to mean so much to his career in the long term.
A medal like transcends golf too, doesn't it? Like, if I think about it, if you were at home and you had a green jacket, let's say you won the career Grand Slam and you also won an Olympic medal. I think if someone came over to your house, you'd love to see the green jacket. You've probably never seen one in person unless you attended the Masters and got up close and personal. But you've never likely seen the Claret Jug in person. Like, those are great trophies. Those are great prizes in golf. But everyone is interested to see or to hold an Olympic gold medal. It just has a little bit more cachet than even some of golf's other titles. So I think that's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. We're going to get into more of the contenders and pretenders for the three medals that are up for grabs this week on Thursday. Rex, you said when I was trying to coordinate this podcast that you were out scouting the golf course on Sunday. Last time we saw it was at the Ryder Cup in 2018. What I remember from that week is a lot of water, a lot of rough. It wasn't a particularly long golf course, but the Americans had an absolute field day trying to extricate themselves from what was thick and juicy rough. What did you take away from your spin around the golf course? What can fans expect when the players put the peg in the ground on Thursday?
Pull back the curtain a little bit. Here's a fourth wall for you. So water is in high demand here. There is no bottled water anywhere on property. So you get a, I don't have one with me, but you get a thermos and there's water machines all around. So there was a chuckle throughout the room. I am in a production trailer. And there was a chuckle in the room whenever someone said, this is what we got for the Olympics. This is our, no, we didn't get this. We got this. Look at that. It's a visual medium.
Hello, Russ.
Yeah, so that's Alex Russell's. Thank you. Thank you, Russ. Appreciate that. And so that was the first thing. Water is in play in 10 of the 18 holes. And you're right. That's what you remember. The one thing I remember, and I think the line I used today, was Thomas Bjorn's luckily not marching through that door to set this golf course up. Because going back to 2018, he was the captain of the European team. And we talk about it every 2 years, and I'm sure we're going to touch on it going into next year at Bethpage Black. The idea that the home course setup has become such an advantage for the home team. No more than in 2018 with the Europeans. I think the running gag was the way he had that golf course set up with the thickest imaginable rough that was all manicured back towards the tee boxes. The longest hitters on the American team were essentially taken out of the equation. Like they had no chance whatsoever. The running joke on the American team was you would have been better off with the captains and the assistant captains. It would have been Jim Furyk and I believe Zach Johnson. Kuchar might have been on the team, but certainly he would have been in the mix. Stricker, they would have played better under those conditions because you had to hit fairways if you were going to have any chance at all to score. It's not necessarily going to be that now. I did get a chuckle out of an Anthony Scanlon, the executive chief executive of the International Golf Foundation, was on Golf Central earlier this morning, and he referenced Olympic tournament speed when he talked about the speed of the greens. I will give you one guess who came up with that line.
Kerry Haig.
Kerry Haig is setting up the golf course from the PGA of America. We all remember him talking about tournament speeds year in and year out at the PGA Championship when it's a tradition unlike any other. We ask him, what are the green speeds going to be? And he deadpans tournament speeds. Well, this week we get Olympic speeds, in case you were curious, whatever that might be. It won't be a pushover. I don't want to make it sound like suddenly we're going to show up at the American Express and 25 under is going to win that. But I think it's going to be more like what we see at the French Open, which is a DP World Tour event that is more times than not played here at Le Golf National. The winner of that event the last 2 years has won at 1600 and 1400, 1400 under respectively. And so something closer to that would be my guess, especially when you're talking about the best players in the world, both for the men this week and the women next week, and the conditions that we'll get. It's very, very lush. They've had a lot of rain. Anybody who watched the opening ceremony on Friday can attest to how much rain they've gotten in Paris the last few weeks. So it's going to be lush. I think it's going to end up to be target golf, and we probably will see something closer to that, but it will not be that Thomas Bjorn monster that we saw in 2018.
What is the weather like this week in Paris? I see you flexing the guns in that extremely too tight medium polo. Is it warm? Is it hot? Is it cooler? What are you expecting temperature wise and wind wise, if not precipitation wise?
It's going to be hot. It's going to be very hot. I believe it's going to be in the 90s coming up towards the opening round on Thursday. 94, I think, is going to be the high outside for tomorrow. So certainly it's going to be on the warm side for Paris. You mentioned my shirt, and I do appreciate it's Ralph Lauren for the Olympics, as you can see. And anyone who has worn Ralph Lauren, it's very good items, but it's not really moisture wicking. So I ask for forgiveness now, because there's probably going to be some sweat stains. It's not going to be a good look. It's going to be a bad scene as we get closer into the week. And wind could factor in to it as well. But again, we're sort of in a suburb of Paris. George Savrikas seemed to think we're 30 minutes from the Eiffel Tower. That seems wildly underestimating how long it would take us to get to the Eiffel Tower from here. But no, I don't anticipate weather to be a factor this week. Now, next week's a little bit different for the women. I'll have to check back with you.
Rex, can you take us behind the scenes as we wrap up this Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lav? You are the field reporter this week in charge of Golf Central. Are you doing tournament broadcasts? Are you able to sneak away to other venues? Since you are an Olympics reporter, what does that mean for your obligations for the next week?
I will be doing the interviews for not just this week, but next week for the women. So I'm looking forward to that as well. And again, I'm going to slide back the curtain. Super producer Jeff Fabian is sitting right across the table from me, and I've got nothing but just withering glares from him, because he's just looking at us trying to figure out how in the world can we do this without a rundown or just off the top of our heads riffing, because that seems impossible. No, I don't know what we're going to do as far as trying to see some other event. Hopefully we can make it out to something. Tom Abbott talked about going to go see the swimming events tonight. That would be pretty cool. Handball was brought up earlier, and I'm going to scoff at the person who said that shouldn't be an Olympic sport, because I find that to be the most fascinating of all Olympic sports.
I love skateboarding. I believe skateboarding.
Surfing, that's in Tahiti.
On Monday. I'm enjoying sort of avoiding Twitter. I've been avoiding Twitter for basically the past year, but if you want to avoid all of these spoiler alerts, it's certainly spoiler season on X, avoiding them and then watching the primetime show beginning at 7 o'clock on NBC. My wife and I have been enjoying that at least on Sunday night. I also, like you, want to see Katie Ledecky. I want to see Simone Biles. I want to see Sha'Carri Richardson with track and field. I also want to see Scottie Scheffler. That's why we're doing this Golf Channel podcast with Rex Laff. Hopefully you get out to other venues as well. Sausage Finger, please wrap up this podcast.
I did want to ask you, because my wife and I were in Belgium, actually, on Friday when the opening ceremony was held. And we were watching the BBC feed. And I'm watching social media at the same time from back home. And I realized that, oh, those are two vastly different feeds. These are two vastly different productions that I'm seeing here, because the BBC feed did not have all the things that seemed to set social media ablaze on Friday night. What was your take on the opening ceremony?
I did not watch it. That's probably going to be subject me to some fines from the NBC Sports offices. But the clips I did see on social media, it certainly seemed like it was a mixed reception. Although, Rex, I can say the competition has been expertly produced. A fan seemed to enjoy it. I think the ratings are indicative of a sports fan base that is eager to have Olympic competition back in our life. Kudos to me for saving what could have been a very precarious situation there. Rex, people can find you, as always, on nbcsports.com/golf. You'll be filing any sort of news, notes, and updates. I'll be doing so from home, from Ponte Vedra, because, again, I am not in Paris. You and I will return for a Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lav on Wednesday for a full-fledged preview of the competition. We'll make our picks for the medals as well. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys in 48 hours. Enjoy the start of your Olympic golf week.
I got you a hat.